Stock Eliminator to the lanes. We need Stock Eliminator to the lanes.
Welcome, everybody, to the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. Introducing your host, RaceToolsDirect.com's own Aaron Allison and the Cobra Jet flying Charlie Downing, better known as Chuck.
This podcast is proudly presented by Race Tools Direct, your source for all of your racing tools and equipment needs. Visit racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533 to order today.
This week on the Class Racing Podcast, episode number 16, we have recent winner Jeff Taylor, who was this past weekend's winner in Stock Eliminator at the JEGS Sports Nationals in Columbus, Ohio. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. I'm glad you could make it. Now, looking at Drag Race Central, if this is correct, that was win number 47 at the national level. 40.
Yeah, that was number 47. Been very blessed in my career to be surrounded by some very smart, very good people that taught me a lot and had good support over the years, and just been very fortunate.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I've won a couple of national events, and I can't even imagine having 47, so that is quite an accomplishment, no matter how long you've been doing it. So that's pretty awesome for sure.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You know, I've been doing it a long time. I run my first national event, Gator Nationals, in 1978. So, you know, I've been doing it for quite some time. And, again, just been surrounded by a lot of very smart people that taught me a lot. And I learned at an early age you had 2 ears and 1 mouth, so listen a whole lot more than you talk. And seems to work out pretty good for me.
No, I've heard that before. I think that's definitely good advice. Why don't we talk a little about this particular race first, and then maybe I can ask you some questions about some of your past and kind of what you got going the rest of the year. Columbus, what'd you think of the race and coming back to Columbus after a few years down in Bowling Green?
Well, obviously, I like Columbus. That's the sixth national event I've won there. I've won the JEGS Sports Nationals 3 times. I really like Columbus. I like racing there. I like it better than I do Bowling Green. I've never had much luck at Bowling Green, so I guess that would be why a lot of people probably like Bowling Green better. I'm not sure, but on a quick note, one thing that worked out really well for me was to get by first round, because the guy I hadn't run first round, it's the first time I've been able to beat him. I think he's beat me like 3 times in a row, so when I looked at the ladder, I really didn't like who I had first round, but he had a ground problem on his car, and the car wouldn't run the dial, so I got lucky to get a good start. And oh, I'm sorry, Aaron. I'm talking about you.
Yeah, I can tell you, Jeff, I was not too excited about running you first round either, because I know that I have beat you a few times in a row, and it's hard to beat somebody that's good like yourself too many times in a row, because usually it kind of goes back the other direction. So,
well, you know, we had you not broke a transmission, we wouldn't have been in that position, and he didn't get to move on the ladder, but so anyway, I got over a big hurdle there first round and got me started, and had a very good race second round with I think it's Jim Roberts with a G-Stick car. We had a very, very good race, and my car was really good. It was just absolutely perfect as far as dialing it all day long. So, and then the tree there, as you know, was very, very loose. It was hard to get a light, and I finally figured out how to do that, and was fortunate enough to turn it into a win.
No, yeah, I mean, looking at your rounds, I mean, the car looked really good all day, you know, solid on the tree. Like you said, you know, Columbus is historically on the loose side of things. Usually not a lot of red lights at Columbus. And, yeah. You know, if you can kind of figure out how to get in a groove and get good, decent lights at Columbus, you know, and you got a good car, I think you got a good chance for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, as you know, I mean, you talked about it there, the lanes are quite different, and none of it really makes sense, but it is, like I said, I was able to figure it out and make it work for me.
Yeah, the lanes historically have always been a little different there, and I even saw them on Saturday evening. They were actually out there checking it with the wheel, checking the rollout. I heard some people had complained about it, and it seemed check right, but I don't know if it's just in my head or not, but I'm pretty sure maybe a difference. I don't know. It must be something with the height of the beams or something. But
I don't know what it is. The ETs don't show it. The 60-foot times don't show it.
Right.
Nothing proves it. I guess I can just look left better than I can look right.
Maybe that's it.
I don't know.
But no, yeah, you did great. You got by Jim Roberts second round. Always tough, especially at Columbus.
Brian Merkel third round.
MJ Quinn is always tough at Columbus. He's, you know, a good blinder driver and usually has it figured out there. And then, you know, you got by, let's see who you got by.
T-Bolt.
Okay, yep, by T-Bolt. And then Ken Witcher in the final, or in the semis. And then Bill Simstra in the final. Looks like he missed the tree a little bit and gave you a little bit of an easier round. But it looks like you were there for him, so.
Yeah, we were actually in the final. I was 30. Obviously, I would have liked to have been a little better. My game plan was to be better. The sun was going down, and it was shining right in the left window, so it was kind of blinding a little bit. But trying to make some excuse for being late. But anyway, I was 30. I was thinking I would be, you know, high teen or 20. But it worked out. And on that particular run, looking back at the 1,000-foot times, I was going probably dead on with a 3 or a 4. So, you know, I was going to give him a pretty good race. Fortunately, like you said, he missed the tree and made it a little easier for me.
Yeah, for sure. And hey, to be 30 and dead on in a final of a national event, I think I'd take that. Just going forward here. So that's a pretty good package, especially in Stock Eliminator. And you know, the finals sometimes historically, I mean, you've been, you know, 47 finals, but you know, at least in my experience, the finals not usually the best race of the day. Very often.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot on the line, and that changes things. Plus, it's, you know, usually tired, sometimes dark. You know, there's usually some other things.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that change, that's for sure. And as you know, it just gets tougher every year. Not only do I get older every year, which makes it tougher, but the opponents are just everybody's really, really good. Everybody. You can get beat anytime there's a car in another lane. You know, you got a pretty good darn chance of getting beat.
No, I agree with that. I mean, the sports, I mean, even, you know, I started racing in Stock Eliminator 2001 or two, kind of in that range, kind of started going to some, mostly in the iTrace side. But just in that time from then till now, which is not, you know, crazy amount of time, it's gotten significantly tighter. I think the cars have gotten better across the board, no question. I think especially with some of these, you know, faster cars have made it even tighter in the class. But it's competitive, and like you said, if you look at the qualifying sheet or the ladder, you know, the night before first round, it just seems like there's less and less people on there that you wouldn't mind running. It seems like there's a lot of people that are good, and you know, it's very competitive, and that's what makes it fun and makes it challenging. And I think, you know, obviously when you win, it makes it even better, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. It's been a tough year for me. I haven't been able to race a whole lot. We had some changes at our shop that required me to be there a whole lot more. But we got all that under control now, and things are going really good. I've got all the right people in place, and it's doing fantastic. So maybe I'll be able to get out and race a little bit more next year. I think that's the only fourth time I've run my car all year. So,
oh wow!
So I'm hoping I can hit it a little bit more next year. You know, everybody, you know, when they see the 47, the first thing they say is, "Man, you need to win three more so you'll have 50." You know, and those people that say that, they also know how hard it is to win one. So I'm going to stick with it for a few more years and see what we can do. We got a really good program, and just give it our best. And hopefully we could achieve that milestone. And I think that would be a real nice period I could put on my career and I think I could just enjoy going to the track and helping my customers and probably not even race anymore.
Yeah, I mean 50 would definitely be quite the number. 47 is obviously crazy impressive to me as well. Back in 1978, you said that was your first win or your first race you went to?
First race. First race, got to the semifinals driving Fred Atkinson's G-Stock Automatic 69 Chevy 2. And the late Jerry Dover Sr. beat me. And then he come back and won the race. And then a couple years later, he got sick and died. But he was a very good racer. And from that day and until he passed on, we were very good friends. So that one will always stick out in my mind, you know, because you just get, you know, the feeling you get so close, and it was my first race, and my son come along and he won the first national event he went to, so he beat me on that one. But
I remember that Norwalk, right?
Yeah. So we our family's just been very blessed with drag racing. We've been able to make a living doing it. And my dad told me early on, he said, you know, you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. And I look forward to getting to work every morning. I still love it and enjoy it. And I'm able to do it with my wife now. And we have a good time, just me and her doing it. And she's my crew chief and helps me at the race. And we're really enjoying our I guess you would say our golden years of racing before we finally hang it up here before too many more years.
Yeah, for sure. Now I know your brother was pretty involved in racing. Was your father as well, or I guess how did you kind of get started in the sport?
My dad and my mom raced. Actually, in 1965 is the last year my mom raced, and she done that. Back then, you know, they'd done the girl powder puff racing and stuff like that. And she raced 72 times and won 69 in 1965. And at the end of that year, she quit driving. And my older brother, Charlie, started racing. And then I just kind of followed in his footsteps and helped him until I got old enough to race. And he taught me an awful lot, and we lost our dad. I lost my dad when I was 17, so he really never got to see me race a whole lot. But like I said, you know, Charlie Lee he's been a major influence with my racing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I never knew that about you, but I mean, Man, Mom, that's pretty impressive. And not only to go racing 70-plus times a year.
Yeah, they race.
That's impressive on its own, yeah. Sam, but then to win 60 sometimes,
yeah.
That's got to be yeah. pretty awesome.
We raced Friday, Saturday, and Sunday every weekend. Every weekend. We lived in the South, you know, in North Carolina, so the weather was always good. There was a race Friday, Saturday, Sunday every weekend, and we usually didn't miss many unless it rained. And so that was cool. And, you know, you always got to figure a way to win. And I guess early on, my dad, what they would do, they'd park the car on the starting line. And the girls, you know, they'd have on shorts and whatever. I mean, it was mm-hmm. a show for the yeah. fans, you know. Remember, it used to be fans that come out to watch racing. And,
that's right.
without the pros there. So the girls would get out of the car and they'd walk back behind the car. And you know, back then they used a flag, and he would flag. They would run, jump in the car, start it, and go. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my dad being the mastermind that he was, he unhooked the neutral switch on my mom's car. So she just parked it on the starting line, left it in drive. She hit the key. She was already in gear, so she always got to jump.
Nice.
The other one's over here starting the car and then trying to put it in drive and then take off. So she'd hop in the car, hit the key, it's already in drive, she was gone, you know. So had a pretty good, a little bit of advantage there, and I don't think anybody ever figured it out. They just thought she was that fast. it was cool. It was cool. She's 84 years old now, but she still loves racing. You know, when I win, I mean, she's one of the first ones to call. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
No, that's great. So, okay, so you started in 78. When was the first win?
First win, 1981, Southern Nationals. My brother won Super Stock. That's the first year of the point system. My brother won Super Stock, and I got beat in the semifinals of Stock. And the National Dragster, you know, it would run about 2 weeks late. Well, 2 weeks later, the Cajun Nationals in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, we were there, you know, before the National Dragster even hit.
Mm-hmm.
And he won Super Stock, and I won Stock. So in 1981, we become the first two brothers to win separate eliminators on the same day. And that's something that we've done four times that year.
Oh, wow.
And we both won the world championship. He won Super Stock and I won Stock. And that was the first year of the point system. 1980 is the last year that they went to California. And if you won the world finals, you were a world champion. And
okay.
So 1981 was the first year of points. And
now, so how many races?
A little bit of history there.
No, it's good. How many races would they count for the points back then?
Same as now.
Okay.
Same as now. Yeah, it was eight. You went to six. But back then you could pre-wave. So if you come in and you made your time trials and you just didn't feel, you know, your car was good, you looked at the ladder, you didn't like what you seen or whatever, you could wave. You could waive the race before it started, so you could go and sign a waiver, and your points wouldn't count.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's the way it was when the first year, and so you'd run, you'd run your six nationals and eight divisionals, but I mean, you could run, a couple of nationals and waive, you know. Actually, you could pre-wave. I'm right. You could pre-wave. And then back then, they did not count your races for you like they do now.
Okay.
When the race was over, you could wave it. So you also had the chance of waving, and you had three waivers. So you could pre-wave, or you could wave it after you run three times. And then you were, you know, then you had to take the next three.
Had to count them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know it was that way through 1988 because I won the championship in 88. And July 1st, I had used every one of my waivers.
Okay.
And I had, back then it was 100 around, I had 500 points. And so that was the 1st of July, I had 500 points. And I went to I went to 11 races after that, and was in 9 finals and won the world championship, and had no waivers left. So
wow!
So I
made
remember.
It count.
I know it was that way through 88, and somewhere around 89 or 90, they changed it to the current system.
Yeah, that would definitely add some more drama to the whole thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yep.
And it was probably hard to decide sometimes whether you should wave or not wave.
It was. You know, you'd sit there and you'd have a 50 or a 60, and you're like, do I keep it or not? And, you know, it was a hard decision, and you had to do it before you left the track. You didn't get a day or two to wait to think about it. You had to do it before you left the track. You had to go to the tower and sign a waiver. So,
Okay, very cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool back then. Pretty soon people's going to figure this out and figure out that I'm getting old.
Nah.
So.
All right, so I think you've won, what, 4 championships now?
Yep, I've won 4 world. I've won 10 divisional championships. I've won the Jegs All-Stars, I don't know, 5 or 6 times. Like I said, just been very blessed, very, very, very blessed with it.
Now, you know, you talked briefly about, you know, trying to get to 50 wins, and that's obviously a goal that you'd like to do before you hang it up. Is there any other races or any other goals that you still have left?
Not really. You know, as far as chasing the championship, I done that last year.
Mm-hmm.
It just don't make sense for me anymore, just financially, being away from my business and the amount of time it takes. And no more money than you can win. You know, you spend more money trying to go to the points meets than you can win at one. So, it chasing the championships pretty much something that it would have to just fall in my lap for me to do it. It's nothing that I'm gonna go out and chase. And like I said, you know, if I could maybe get them those other 3 wins somehow, some way, I'd be real happy with my career. Because you know, I mean, I don't buy nothing. I make everything at my shop.
Yep, absolutely.
I build my own car. I do everything myself. So I drive the truck to the race. I load it, I unload it, I strap it down, you know, I do everything. So, you know, that's pretty self-satisfying that I've been able to do it all and not have to really, not that I wouldn't like to have somebody else do it, just can't afford it, you know, so I've always had to,
right.
Had to do it, you know, the only way I could do it, and that's work day and night and make it yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I guess let's talk a little bit about your business. I think, you know, most of the listeners on here probably are somewhat familiar with, you know, with your business, but I got to come down to your place, I guess it was this past spring,
mm-hmm.
For the first time. And I can say it's probably one of the, if not the nicest engine shops I've ever been to. Especially one that's, you know, not a Hendrix or something like that, but, you know, one that's, you know, it's more or less in your backyard and, spotless, clean, organized. I mean, just a really nice place. So I guess, you know, once you explain a little bit about, you know, what your business looks like, you know, what percentage of it's racing, what kind of things you work on most, you know, just talk a little bit about that.
Well, about half of our stuff is NHRA drag racing. The other half, I'd say probably 10% 15% at the most is bracket racing, not a lot. And then the rest is street rods. We do a lot of street rod stuff. There's a guy named Bobby Alloway. He's one of the top street rod builders in the country. And we've been fortunate enough to hook up with him. And we do a lot of very, very high-end street rod engines. And we always do something different. We don't build him a LS1 or a small block Chevrolet. You know, it's a 429 Boss Ford, or we just done a all aluminum Hemi fuel injected. A couple of 409s. We're doing two SB2s right now. So he don't do anything normal. Everything he builds is just, you know, way different than, you know, normal stuff right now. People do LS1s, just about anything. Street rod, you just buy LS1 and put in it. He don't do anything like that. And that's been really, really good for us financially. That side of our business makes more money than the racing side does. But I still love the racing. I love the challenge of finding more power, taking a set of rules that you got to stay within and making more power and beating other people out there. That's where I come from and what I've done all my life and what I really enjoy doing. We build around 100 engines a year. I have three employees besides me and my wife. And you know, I like my stuff very clean and organized, and I know where stuff's at. And I was able to, my last two shops have been, in my opinion, by my standards, are nice. And you know, now I got my dream shop at my house. So I walk to work every morning, and I think every morning when I walk to work how blessed I am to be able to walk down that little walkway and walk in a really nice shop and have the best equipment that money can buy, and have very, very good customers that appreciate what we do. And it's just, again, very blessed.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, and definitely clean and organized. Definitely one thing that I never forget when you walk in there. I've been to a lot of engine shops and been around racing a long time, and most of them, I would say, are a little more on the dirty side, unorganized, parts stacked up everywhere. But definitely wasn't your guys.
No.
How long have you had your own shop? I know, because I know you've spent some time working for some other guys, and
I worked for my brother. I worked for my brother for 30 years, Taylor Engines, and then I done a deal with which I worked at Jegs for 2 years and built their race team and got it all organized for them back in the late 90s. And then I done some stuff with Bullet Motorsports with Conley, and kind of got that deal going. And they call us up. And you know, and then I, 2004, I started Jeff Taylor Performance. And I rented equipment from my brother, and then I had a building, attached to his that I worked in, and done that for a little bit of time. And then I worked out a deal with Bo Butner, and I moved to Indiana and done a 3-year contract with him. Also, you know, he let me do my other engine customers as well, as long as his stuff was always taken care of. And we were fortunate enough there to win a couple of championships and quite a few races. And then we really liked it there. When my contract was up, I decided to just do my own shop. And we built a new shop in an industrial park. And we really like where we live. It's very centrally located. A lot of stock and super stock customers in our area. So it's worked out really well for us, and It's just, you know, and then we decided we were able to find 20 acres of land and we built our house there. And then later, about a year later, we built our shop and moved everything in there, and just worked out great.
Yeah, it's awesome. And for those of you who don't know, Jeff is in the southern Indiana, you know, kind of Louisville, Kentucky metro area.
Yeah, we're 7 miles from Louisville.
Yeah, so. Wow, well, that's quite impressive. I've heard some of that story, but definitely not all of it. And to have worked for names like Jegs, you know, Butner, Conley, and Bullet Motorsports, I mean, just name a few, that's all pretty good racers right there, so.
Yep, had the, you know, I learned a lot from Bill Jenkins. I spent, you know, 2 years working with him with the Bullet thing. Learned a lot there. Spent 2 years with Richard Maskins working with the Jegs Pro Stock deal. You know, good friends with David Rear, and was good friends with Lee Shepard and Buddy Morrison, Bruce Allen, you know. I know just about everybody in the business. I've had some kind of a, you know, close relationship with them over the years. And I always say a person's only as good as their contacts. And I really feel like I got some really good contacts out there in the racing world. If I have a problem, I can usually find somebody that can help me.
Yeah, for sure. And just on the other end, I know, you know, I don't know all of your 100 engines a year that you do, but I know there's quite a few that have been world champions and race winners just in the past few years, right? So,
yeah, you know, Jimmy DeFrank, 5-time world champion. We do his stuff. Anthony Bertozzi, I think he's won 18 or 19 world championships. Gosh, the list goes on and on. The Bohannons, we do their stuff. Irvin Johns, obviously, we do you and your dads, and we got some very, very, very good customers. I don't have a list right now.
Well, yeah,
I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out, but we appreciate all of our customers, and as you know, Aaron, you can call me on Saturday night at 10 o'clock if you got a problem. I'm going to answer the phone and I'm going to try to help you.
Yeah, no, you've, I mean, Jeff, you definitely helped us a lot putting our new, you know, Copo Camaro together, and definitely answered the phone quite a few times with not only engine-related stuff, but some other stuff on the car, so
yeah.
Definitely thank you on that. And you're at the racetrack, right, as much as you can be, and that's that means a lot.
Yeah, that's why I have to, you know, I feel like it's important that I still race and go so I can be there for my customer when he has a problem. And you know, try to help him, and you know, I guess you'd call that good customer service is what I really try to do that.
No, I think so, and I think, you know, me and my dad have always tried to work with people, not only on the engine side, but just other parts of chassis builders, et cetera, guys that actually race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's chassis builders that build a fine car, but have never been down the track in their life, or you know.
And
maybe that's okay, but I kind of like dealing with, I'd rather have a guy that's maybe not quite as good of a welder, but him and his kid go race on the weekends and he gets it, right? So
that's right. You know, make it go down the track.
And I think if you align yourself with people, you know, across the board, whether it's buying trailers or dualies or whatever, with people that actually go out there and use them and tow with them and that sort of thing, you know, I think that's helpful, because it does make a difference.
Yeah, the other person that really has been good to me over the years and obviously give me my first shot at a national event is the Fred and Jeff Atkinson. You know, Fred's passed on now, but me and Jeff still have a very, very good relationship, you know, both, you know, through just friendship before the racing, you know. So Jeff's been a big part of helping me get going again and helping me and his dad, you know, helping me from the start. So
nice.
just been a lot of people. I can't even name them all, the people that's helped me to achieve my goals.
Nice. If I got time, I want to ask you one or two more questions. You got a few more minutes?
Yeah.
I know I'm a little bit longer than we talked about, but the other thing I just want to touch on, so, you know, we just talked, you know, offline before we kind of started the interview, but you're currently at the Big Money Bracket Race this weekend.
Yeah.
I think you said it was the only one of the year for you that you're going to go to.
Yep, it is.
But in between first and second rounds, so congrats on winning the first round.
Yeah,
thank you. But, you know, it just seems like more recently that bracket racing has kind of exploded, especially on the top ball side.
Yes.
You know, next year alone, there's two different races that pay over $1 million to the winner.
Yep.
There was two this year that paid over $500,000 to the winner. And just the publicity that bracket racing is getting all of a sudden, the exposure, et cetera, it just seems like within drag racing, it's kind of the place to be right now.
It appears that way.
What do you think about that?
Well, you know, we rolled in here and we've been treated so good. I mean, can we do anything for you? Do you need anything? You know, it's just the way they treat you. They really appreciate you being here. And they voice that to you. You don't have to think about it. They tell you that. And you know, they just go out of their way to make you feel like you're wanted. We just don't have that at NHRA anymore. I have Dill at Indy, and I'm going to bring this up, and maybe I shouldn't, but I'm going to. I run the class final, and I was driving Jeg's Challenger, and it was for me to win class with that particular car through the Mopar stuff and everything, it was at least $2,800 I could have won. And we got bit by that lazy photo cell in the right-hand lane. And I'm 0-20 on the tree. The guy's clearly on video, a half a car length ahead of me when we left starting line. He runs a 116 60-foot. He has a 103 light. He runs 904. The best he's run all weekend is 917. You do the math. You look at the picture. You do anything you want to. He clearly red-lighted. I go to the tower. And they're like it's a joke or something, you know. It's $2,500 to me. That's a lot of money to me, and all of us sportsman racers, that's a lot of money. And they act like it's no big deal. And you look at the math. I pull up all of his other runs. He clearly red lighted. And I told him, I said, his red light didn't come on. I don't want you to disqualify him. I just want you to take 2 minutes and rerun us. Just let us come back. You got plenty more cars. I mean, it will take 2 minutes. It's going to take us a lot longer to prepare for the run than it's going to take you to run us. 2 minutes at the most to send us down the racetrack and give us a fair deal. Because all you guys are sitting here looking at this paper and you know it's not right and you're telling me it's not right, but you're not going to do anything about it. That's hard. I mean, and they didn't do anything about it. I mean, you know, it's and those things are, it's hard. And we were the last pair of super stockers to run. The first three pair of super gas cars all had the same problem, and they rerun all three of them. And,
yeah.
You know, it's almost like, I mean, I don't understand that. You know, a lot of the people in the NHRA that I've had this conversation with, they don't understand it, but, you know, the race director made the decision, and it is what it is. But that's the way we're being treated. And, you know, I don't know. At some point, there's just so many of us that's really kind of looking for a reason not to do it anymore. anyone, right. You know, and it seems like they're just trying to give us more reasons not to do it. I don't know. I don't know what I'm really saying other than, boy, I raced in the good times. I raced when it was fun. I raced when it was fair. I raced when they appreciated you being there and treated you good. And I'm just very fortunate that I got to race in those times, because those times aren't here anymore. You know, they want to get us in there, get our money, get us the heck out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Indy thing was really interesting. And the main thing that I thought was interesting, I'm surprised they did any reruns. Just from historically, NHRA usually doesn't, especially at national event level.
Right.
They just say, you know, nope, not. But then they did some reruns. So that kind of shocked me to some extent.
Yeah.
And I think it was the right move to do some reruns, right?
Yeah.
But the problem with that is, okay, which ones do you run and which ones don't you rerun?
That's right. If you do one, you got to do them all.
And, you know, on social media, you know, look at Facebook, and there was stuff all over Facebook that weekend of Indy. People showing runs that probably should have been rerun. Some were, some weren't.
Yeah.
Some of the ones that got rerun didn't look great, you know, so it's like it really just opens a can of worms. So I think that – I don't know what the right answer to that is, but I think if you rerun one, you almost got to rerun anything that looks suspect.
I do too.
And I think that's sad. Now, I will say, you know, at Columbus this past weekend with a sportsman-only race, and I will say I thought it was pretty smooth in general.
It was great. It was great.
You know, the you know, Columbus is not the nicest racetrack in the world, but it was
right.
Okay. It's good enough.
Yeah, it was a good race. Everything went smooth other than a little bit of rain. And, you know, and he come back and he made the right call. He went right down his schedule. He treated and had everybody got treated fair. I just applaud him, the job he done. I was so surprised that a lot of us didn't get cut, but man, he treated us really good. The race was really good. That was the 68th NHRA national event final round that I've been in my career. And the U.S. Nationals was the absolute worst race I've ever been to since I've been racing. I've been to races where it rained out and you had to come back 2 weeks later and it wasn't as bad as that. It was absolutely horrible. I rolled in the gate after, I mean, they had already parked all day. I got there at 5:00. No, I didn't. I'm sorry. I got there about 3:30 on Tuesday afternoon. 21 hours later, I parked my rig. Now, I mean, I didn't show up early. I mean, I know if you show up on, well, you should wait. I showed up 8 hours after they've been parking and still sat in line for 20 some odd hours before I parked. I mean, who the hell's making them decisions? I have no idea, but it's absolutely the worst race I've ever been to.
Yeah, we talked quite a bit in the last podcast with Charlie and Austin, who were both in Indy, about, you know, some of the stuff in Indy and how bad it was.
Yeah.
And I think what, you know, me and my father were just talking about this morning. You know, we're both a little down on racing right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And my dad had a real good year. And I think, you know, NHRA racing especially, it's a large investment of money, no question, right?
That's right.
But probably the biggest thing is it's a big investment of time.
That's right.
You know, you go 3, 4, 5 days to race once.
Yeah.
You know, and Indy's a separate, even longer period.
That's right.
You know, sometimes it's easy to get down, you know,
That's
after
right.
you've been somewhere for 4 days sitting in the rain or in the truck or whatever. And
yeah.
And I think that's part, you know, I was talking to some guys down at Columbus about this, and I think that's some of the appeal to some of these big, you know, bracket racing weekends, whether it pays huge money or not. I know the race that you're at this weekend is what, 3-10s?
315s and 100 tomorrow night. 64 car shootout for 100.
Yeah, so I mean, it's, you know, that's obviously great money. As crazy as some of these other races, but the awesome thing about that is you're going to get to race at least four times.
That's right.
In 3 days, and I think that's maybe some of the appeal of some of these bigger races. I don't know. I just wonder. You know, the average age of the NHRA sportsman racer is definitely much higher than a bracket racer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I love NHRA Stock and Super Stock. I think there's very few things that are cooler.
Yeah, but, I mean, like I told you, 50% of my livelihood comes from that.
But, and one of the main reasons that Charlie and I have kind of signed up to take our time to do this podcast is to try to promote Stock and Super Stock a little better, because I honestly, if you had a new, a new family, say a father and son wanted to go racing tomorrow,
yeah,
and they came to you and said, hey, I got $30,000, I want to buy a car and a trailer, so what should I do? It'd be hard not to say, man, you should look at bracket racing.
Yeah.
Because just the time and investment, and
that's right.
And it's not easy to do this right now. Yeah. So I'm hoping some of that will turn around. I think in general things go in waves.
Yeah.
I think there's some of the problems with the bracket racing scene right now is that, you know, all these big money races have hurt the local and smaller races.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
After you've gone and raced, you know, you go race for 315s at Louisville, it's probably hard to get excited about going back to Ohio Valley next weekend and racing for $800, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And the other thing is it's easy to dump. You know, I was talking to some guys that go to those big money races all the time, and they said, man, I mean, Aaron, you can spend $2,000-$4,000 pretty easy a weekend.
Oh yeah,
not winning anything. You know,
well, that one deal tomorrow night. I entered it. It's $2,000 entry fee, but it's 64 cars for $100,000. You know, I went to Indy and paid $300 and some to run against, you know, 128 cars for you can't win $10,000. You know.
Yeah. So it's invested,
like you said, 7 days of my time.
Right. Right. And. So, you know, definitely as I've gotten older and family and kid, you know, the time thing, I think, is the harder
deal. Yep. Time
the harder thing.
Place. Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic. I think, you know, there's a lot of really cool things happening in class racing.
It is.
And the car counts are still pretty good. I mean,
car counts are great. They're higher than they've ever been, and people's fighting to get in. You know, the quotas are too low. So the state of sportsman racing is strong, you know, and NHRA, why should they really care? Because they're going to fill their quotas every time. So,
yeah.
You know, it's, and we're going to keep going because it's what we love. So
let me ask you one more question on the subject.
Okay.
If you were in charge of NHRA Sportsman Racing tomorrow, what would you change?
I would definitely open up the quotas, and I would have to figure out how I could do that with the amount of space that they have to park stuff anymore because of, you know, the
right.
size of the rigs and stuff. But there's just certain places that you know, the quotas could be opened up. But the biggest thing is the money. I mean, it's just ridiculous the amount of money they pay. It's just unbelievable. And the way they treat the vendors. They've run all the vendors off. You know, I mean, it's those are the main things I would work on, is getting so that more people could come that want to come, and work on a schedule that would work for them, and money, get the money up.
Yeah, well, and like this past weekend, the Sports Nationals payout. You obviously know because you won it, but
yeah,
you know, the entry fee for that was 210. Okay, so 210 bucks. They're really only, what's that, 30, 40 bucks more than a points meet?
Yeah.
But it paid almost double to win.
Oh, no, I won. I'll win probably really close to 10 grand.
No, I'm just saying in purse.
Yeah.
Track purse. Okay.
Oh, yeah,
track
yeah,
purse.
Yeah. Almost
track
double.
Purse
yeah.
was 1,800, I think, right?
Yeah.
Plus the contingency, obviously, way better. No question.
Yeah.
You win close to 10 grand. But the other nice thing, the round money. I mean, I lost third round in Superstock.
Yeah.
And I got 300 bucks.
That's right.
So,
you got to get runner up to get that in a points meet.
That's right. So I think, you know, I for sure would be willing to pay 210 bucks at a points meet if we could get that kind of round money.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, I don't, you'd have to do the math, but I think, you know, the points meets just make no financial sense anymore.
Yeah.
And I think, let alone the contingency and that what we talked about, but I just think that if they could get the money squared around a little bit,
yeah,
and kind of open up some of the races that don't have restrictions, I mean, I think, you know, there's obviously the, you know, people want to go to these national events, and maybe the answer is just to have more sports nationals again. I mean, they used to do that and they kind of got away from it.
Maybe a little more sports nationals, yeah.
Well, hey, Jeff, thanks for spending some time here today to kind of talk about last weekend. Congrats again. And then, obviously, your great career that you've had thus far. And great luck this weekend. I'd love to see you on Facebook taking that $100,000 down tomorrow night.
I'm going to do my best, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I hope I didn't say anything that would offend anybody if I did. I'm sorry. I just... I say it in my opinion, and it's my opinion. It might be wrong, but it's my opinion. So it's just the kind of the way I see things. And but again, I really appreciate you having me on, and hopefully we can snag another one down the road somewhere, and we can get on here again with you.
Well, sounds good.
All right.
Great, and good luck, Jeff.
Okay, thanks, Aaron. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Bye.
That concludes the Class Racing Podcast. Please remember to visit racetoolsdirect.com for all of your tools and equipment needs.